This is a Steam Studio production.
Welcome to the Steam Spotlight, where we celebrate the inspiring achievements of students, educators, and community partners making waves in the Steam field.
For this Steam Studio Spotlight, we are thrilled to welcome NIU's very own graduate, Elizabeth Holden. Now, Liz is a writer, physics teacher, travel company owner, podcast host, and roller derby player. Liz completed her bachelor's and master's degree from Northern in 2004 and 2006, respectively. She went into physics because she knew she could still write fiction with a physics degree, but might have a hard time doing physics with an English degree. Liz's debut young adult novel, Mighty Millie Novak, was released by Flux Books in 2024 and has an audiobook created by Tantor Media in 2025. Liz loves writing and reading both twisty adult thrillers and fun contemporary young adult. Liz believes the ideal condition in which to write a novel in would be a dining car of a train traveling through the Alps with a pot of tea right beside her. Though Liz doesn't have that opportunity as much as she would like and does most of her writing in her home in Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Steam Studio. Today we are talking with Liz Holden. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we are so excited to chat with you. Not only do you have this really cool background, but you're an NIU alum.
I am. Yeah, I got my master's at NIU in 06. I got my bachelor's at NIU in 04 in physics both times. And yeah, I love NIU. So awesome. I'm excited.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. So what does Liz Holden do in the world?
A lot of things. So I have been teaching physics at UW-Platteville for 15 years now. It's one of the smaller UW schools, or medium size, I don't know. It's about an hour from Madison, and I teach physics there. And then I also own a travel company with my husband. We started Leaping Hound Travel because we originally met because we would do study abroad trips with students on campus, and then we decided we wanted to be able to run our own non-academic trips. And so we also do, so we have like a side travel business focusing on Europe and on like sort of quirky, interesting themes on our tours. And we do group tours mostly in the summers, and then also organize personal travel for people. And then in addition to that, I am a writer. So I had my debut YA novel come out in the summer of 2024. It's called Mighty Millie Novak, and it's a contemporary YA novel, kind of coming of age with some humor and rom-com elements about a anxious queer teenage girl who joins a roller derby team and falls in love. And then I also play roller derby, and I play in Madison. And I live in Madison, Wisconsin. That is what I do.
I love there's so many places I want to start. First off, because like so many fun connections. And I think so many times we think of scientists and as these, you know, we are scientists and that's what we do. But there's all these really cool things. But I want to start about the physics first. So what do you teach in physics? What's your emphasis? What's your area? Why physics?
I actually started school as a journalism major. I went to community college for 2 years. Well, I went to Columbia College in Chicago for a semester, went to McHenry County College for a year and a half, and then transferred to NIU. And when I was at McHenry County College, I was not really into journalism, but I liked to write. And then I took an astronomy class and absolutely fell in love with it. And I had already been planning on transferring to NIU and found out, okay, well, you can't, most people don't get an undergrad program in astronomy. They do an undergrad in physics. And so I was like, okay, I'll just switch to physics. And, you know, there aren't a lot of classes in common. And so so I had you know, a lot of math to take. But I switched over to physics mostly because of my interest in astronomy. And that is also what I did my master's thesis research in, was in astrophysics. Now I just teach mostly intro classes and I'm not doing any research. I'm in a lecturer position. So I just teach, I was going to say full time. I actually am not quite full time now. I used to be, but because of the rest of my life and my schedule, I'm now like a just slightly under full time appointment to accommodate all the other things I do. So I teach, I've a bunch of different undergrad classes. Some of the ones that are for students majoring in physics or engineering, like the calculus based physics mm-hmm. one, physics two. And then I also teach the physics that's for like more like bio or chem majors that are, it's algebra based physics one or two. And then we also have like a survey course that's like kind of a sampler, the kind of lowest possible amount of math for people who for some reason their major requires it.
Lays out from physics to your debut novel. Like where did that come from? Where did you obviously always had an interest in the writing with the journalism background. So was it a big leap to make, or it was just kind of like, hey, this is going to be fun. I'm going to try this.
I mean, no, it wasn't like that.
Novel.
No, it was very much not like that. It was, so I got my master's in physics and I then moved up to Madison. I'd always pictured getting my PhD and I didn't get into the schools I wanted to get into, and the schools I did get into, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go there. And I think I was a little wishy-washy about making my decision for where to get my PhD, how to get it. And I was just starting to feel kind of burnt out. And I decided, like, I think I might want to just teach for a bit. And I had been surprised by how much I enjoyed TAing when I was getting my master's. I hadn't expected to enjoy teaching. And I was like, I think I actually love teaching more than I like research. And so I decided, I'm not going to get my PhD right now. I'm going to teach. And so I was teaching part-time at a community college in Madison, teaching part-time at another school, kind of piecing things together. And at some point, you know, I was talking to my mom about how it's always going to bother me that, like, I didn't get my PhD. Like, it's going to bug me my whole life, and it shouldn't, but it does. And she was like, well, picture, like, being, like, you know, 85 or something, and looking back and thinking, like, do you think you're going to be towards the end of your life looking back and going, God, I really wish I had gotten my PhD. Because if you feel that way, then you should get it. And I looked back and I imagined looking back and I thought, no, I'm going to regret that I never actually gave it a shot to write something and get something published. That's what I actually care about the most. I think the PhD thing is more of a status thing. And that's what I've been planning, and like an ego thing, you know,
right.
And like what I actually want is to write more. And so, I mean, that was still, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. It wasn't like, and then the next year I had a novel published, but it did sort of help me orient that way. I wrote a novel while I was in grad school at NIU. It wasn't that great, but it existed, and it showed me that I had the ability to finish something that long. And I think that that was important. I sent it out to a couple of literary agents. Nothing really happened with it. And this was still like, this was 06, 07. So there were still quite a few that wanted it printed and mailed to them. It was like right on the cusp where like not every agent had you email stuff in. And then I just wrote a lot of short stories. I had short stories published places. I started a lot of novels and didn't finish them. I joined writing groups. I just kind of immersed myself more in writing, and also, you know, life happened. I was starting to run these study abroad trips and, you know, met my husband and working on my career at UW-Platteville. And all the time, it's like writing's always been really important to me. And so sometimes it would sort of take more priority and I would focus more on like, I'm going to try to write this much of a sort of short story and keep up this pace, or I'm going to meet weekly with friends who are writers so we can keep each other on track. And other times other things would take priority and it would kind of wane. And then at some point in 2018, I got an idea for a middle grade novel. So a little younger than YA. And I was just like, oh, I can just see the whole novel. I'm going to finish it. I'm going to do it. And I completed it kind of quickly. And I also was listening to a lot of like really good podcasts about the writing industry and like the publishing industry and how to write a query letter and how to, you know, find a literary agent and all of that side of things. And so I started sending out that novel. And although I didn't get an agent for it, I got a lot of interest of like encouragement of like agents who bothered to write back. Okay, not this one, but send me something in the future. Or I really liked it, but it wasn't quite right for my list for this reason. But like a lot of positive feedback, which is not common because literary agents are like the busiest people on earth. And that was like a really good sign. And I kept tweaking that novel and I was starting, because in my head I was like, this is the one. I am going to get an agent. This is going to be the book. And then in 2020, my Roller Derby League was on hiatus because of COVID, and I missed it really bad. And all I was doing was just being in my house, being sad. And I'd kind of had the idea of writing a young adult novel about roller derby floating around my head for a while. And then it kind of crystallized. And I wrote the book in under 3 months. I wrote Mighty Millie Novak. I queried it that fall, got an agent pretty quickly after that, like really quickly. It ended up not working out with that agent. So there was still some bumps. I ended up leaving that agent in 2021. She wasn't right for me. And I think a lot of people are, as when you're a writer, you think, once I get an agent, this is who I have to have, like, this is my chance, you know? And I was like, no, we're not getting good vibes. This is not the relationship I want. This is a business relationship. I don't like this. I won't trash talk her, but it wasn't right. And so I left her, started querying again, got an agent in the beginning of 22. And then she sold Millie, Mighty Millie Novak, in spring of 23. And it was published in summer of 24. So it was a long journey with a lot of work, and it was all sort of happening concurrently with all my physics stuff. So I'm the sort of person that likes breaks from things. Like I want to focus a lot on this, and now I want a complete break from that where I'm not thinking about that at all, and I can focus on this other thing. And it's nice to have that. Like,
well, I think you also just told a great story of resilience. I mean, we talk a lot, whether you're in science or engineering or writing, we talk a lot about the design cycle's role in that, this idea of iteration, the...
Yes.
You're going to have to fail a few times. I love stories of, I don't love it, but I love the stories the writers tell when they're like, I wrote my first novel. It was bad. No one reads it, but it sits there, but it was done. And the process of the feedback and the improvement and the having the courage to abandon a story for one that might actually be the right story to tell.
Yeah.
And like, that's so true. And the perseverance that you had through the whole process.
I've read somewhere that like most authors that get published, it's not because they're the best writer. It is because they're the most comfortable being told no and continuing. Mm-hmm. And it is iterative. Like you said, it's not just about being told no and ignoring it. It's about like in science, whatever, like if I see themes, if I get one rejection from a literary agent that says, the voice for this sounds too young and it's a little weird, you know, say something like that, then I can be like, whatever, it's just one data point. Mm-hmm. But if I get 10 literary agents giving me similar feedback, then I go, maybe I should think about this and I should change things. And like paying attention to trends and making adjustments based on those trends, as opposed to either responding quickly to each one, even if, because sometimes literary agents are people too. I got some really bizarre feedback that didn't make any sense for my books, you know? So being like, oh no, that's just one data point. We're not going to change everything because of that one random thing someone said, but also I'm not going to just put my head down in the sand and ignore bad stuff. I'm going to take it into account, make some changes, try again, make some changes, try again. It also means, I think, having a good sense of like when to act and when to keep working. I feel like most authors either have a tendency to wait too long or have a tendency to do it too fast. And I'm definitely in the too fast side, but I get a lot done that way. I query before I should sometimes. But it works out. But I mean, I think the good thing though is like when I did query Mighty Millie Novak for my agent who sold that, like I was trying to do it in batches. Like that's the smart way to do it is query 10 agents. Because if they all give you that same data, you want to be able to make changes. If you query, 60 agents and then you find out, oh, I should have made this change, but it's too late because you queried them, then it's bad. So yeah, it does have a lot in common with like the whole design process and taking, looking at data. And I have so many spreadsheets. So,
yeah. I think that's our t-shirt logo is, I got a spreadsheet for that. Like, I think
nice.
It's not life if you don't have a spreadsheet for it.
Liz, as you've done what I think a lot of people that set out to become a novelist or a writer in any form is to write something and sell it. And you've done that. So, congratulations.
Thank
like, that's
you.
Awesome. But was there something now that you're on the other side of it and being able to say, I've done that? Was there something that you didn't expect or you wish you would have learned, or does it feel like you expected it to, I guess? I don't know.
No, I don't think it does. I think that some other wiser author warned me about this, that like, there's always going to be something. So like now it's like, oh, I'm on the other side of this, but my brain can still be like, oh, but it wasn't at one of the big five publishers. It was at a smaller publisher. Oh, but it didn't get as many, it got good reviews, but not as many, you know, like it was in some Barnes and Nobles, but it wasn't an automatic carry from all of them, you know, like it didn't get this award, you know, there's always going to be something where I'm like, still feeling like, no, I need more. And it's, I think I tricked myself for a long time thinking once I'm published, that's all I need. And I'll just be happy. And then we're done. And I'm not. You know,
is that motivating or almost, I don't know,
no,
disheartening.
I mean,
I don't like being negative.
I think it's not good. Mostly not good. But I think it's very human. I think it's, also something to kind of just have like some self-awareness about and being like, I need to pause and remember what I have accomplished. And then, you know, yeah, I think aspects of that could be motivating, like when I recognize, oh, I do want more, I want to keep working and I want to grow as a writer and everything. But it's also important to realize, well, like what you can control and what you can't, and having to learn that lesson of like, ultimately what I can control is what I write and how I communicate with my agent, with an editor, with other writers, and how I, you know, that's all I can control. I can't control reviews. I can't control unhinged Goodreads reviews from random people. People say really strange things. You know, like that's outside of my control. So I shouldn't stress about it because it's just not possible. You know, think about like what aspects of this process are within my control. So, I mean, it's really been like, I thought it would just be like, yay, all the time, everything is wonderful, and now I'm a writer, and I can just have that satisfaction or something, which I think, honestly, has something in common with that sense I had when I was in my mid-20s and thought, well, I just need my PhD, and then I'll just be happy because I'll have doctor in front of my name, and now that's fine. And, I mean, two letters in front of your name is not enough to go through the arduous process of getting a PhD. And similarly, like, the incredible effort in putting a book out, like just doing it for that is not the reason to do it. Like the money is also not good enough, you know, like I'm not, yes, I got paid for writing, but it's not like I'm Stephen King. Right. So, I mean, like,
well, Liz,
you
then
do it. You have to do it for the right reasons of like, because you love it.
So are you glad you did it? Like,
oh God, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Without question. But I have to also just recognize, oh, I'm human and I'm still going to do all that same garbage that I always do on the other side of it. I'm not this magic evolved person now.
So, yes, you have shed out of the cocoon.
Right. I'm like enlightened or something.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm not enlightened. No.
Yeah. You hear about that though, where people set goals. So you're intrinsically motivated. You've got these goals. You hit it. And then you have that moment of, I don't feel different, or, well, now what? And it almost stops you. And so what helps you get through that next okay, I've achieved it. My life's not over. I still have to go do stuff. What's the next thing I'm going to do?
I mean, I think that being around other writers has been really helpful. And like, just in the same way that getting a physics degree at NIU was also very, very hard. And what got me through that were just the amazing people that I knew who were all kind of suffering together. I mean, I say that with affection, you know, it was hard classes, you know, like, it's not suffering in a bad way, but, you know, like doing all that work together, it was like, it's because of my friends that I made in that program that made it such a worthwhile process and helped me focus when I didn't know how to focus, because I could be like, well, I can have my friends over and we can all work on this problem set and talk and have snacks and whatever. And in the same way, I think that having writers around that I really like and trust who have similar career goals as me, like, because I think a lot of people write and that's awesome, but I found that it's fantastic, but for me, given my goals of like being traditional publishing avenue, I want someone who is going through those same things, who can be like pushing me to be like, all right, what are you writing next? What are your plans? And so like, I have weekly coffee with my writer friend, Christine, and we talk for maybe half hour, 45 minutes about what we're going to work on. And then we write, and then we, you know, catch each other up on our goals and what we're doing next week. And we can talk about like, you know, emails with our agents and like, what news are we waiting for? And just like, community is everything, I think.
And I think whether you're a community of writers, a community of scientists, a community of educators, like the way we connect in and brainstorm, and I always call it verbal thinking. We verbally think with our community. It just helps.
Yeah.
It helps us with that iterative process. It helps us be more resilient in our goal setting.
Absolutely. And it's often easier to see things if you're seeing it in someone else, like if you can, you know, see it from their perspective, or they can remind you of things or whatever. They can tell you their experiences and learn a lot that way.
So how does that translate into being an educator? Because I love that you brought up the idea that you started out wanting to research physics, but fell in love with the teaching side of it. And I don't think enough people realize that science education is an amazing career opportunity for those of us who love science and engineering, but it's a whole different kind of career with the sciences. So do you find that same kind of community connection with your students and helping them with their thinking?
Yeah, I mean, like, that was one of the hardest things during lockdown, was not getting to be around my students when I was teaching. I mean, I don't know if that's one of... There were a lot of hard things.
There were a lot of hard things,
But about, like, you know, I talked to my students, because I, after lockdown, I ended up flipping my classroom so that, you know, they watch videos and take notes outside of class. I made the videos, and then in class, they're doing worksheets and activities and stuff. Because I realized, like, I can deliver those lectures on Zoom. I know what I'm going to say. I've been saying it for, at that point, like 10 years or whatever. What I can't do is interact with them and have like work with them one-on-one and figure out like what is going on like a like personal level with them, that they're not understanding this concept and getting it to click for them, and like trying something different and like, okay, that doesn't make sense, let's talk about this. And working with the students is, I don't know, really, really valuable. It's something that every time I go back to a new semester, I'm like, oh yeah, I love this. Like, yeah, my days are busier, but I love this. Like, I think even if I did have Stephen King levels of money, I wouldn't, well, I don't know what I would do in that case. That's hard to imagine. But
saying,
let's say
none of
more
us
money.
Can imagine.
Stephen King even level. If I did have, I'm not working towards a goal of quitting teaching.
Right.
I would, you know, maybe someday I might teach less or something if I was suddenly fabulously, hugely successful, but I have no desire to not teach. I need it. I love being around the students. I like my coworkers too. And just like being around people who I feel like are similar to me in some important way, that like they're physics people, you know, you just like get each other. We can share about, oh, I tried this new experiment with my class and this is how it went. If anybody wants to try it, let me share this, and like collaborating on that, or like, oh, I'm having this issue. Does anyone have ideas? I know I went to this conference, this AAPT, the American mm-hmm. Association of Physics Teachers. I went to their conference in 2011 and I was like, these are my people. Like, I'm just like, I made friends immediately with people there that I'm still in touch with who like came to my wedding and stuff. And like, you know, it just like, it's a certain brand of physics people who are really interested in talking about it and communicating about it. And I'm not necessarily interested in talking about it only to people who are already sold on it, but who people who are like, maybe, I don't know, like, especially when I teach algebra-based physics, I get a lot of students who come in, their grades are very important to them. They're like pre-vet or pre-dental school, or like, you know, they want to do well, but they're very afraid of physics and not interested in it, especially, but want to do well. And finding a way for them to realize, oh, wait, this is interesting. This is something that I can learn, something I can enjoy. Like, that's, I don't know, really important to me. And it was great to meet other people who value that same feeling.
I always loved physics to me. I know when you start getting into like high energy fit, like all the weird theoretical yeah. physics, that then it gets a little outside of what I can imagine. But for me, most physics was what I could see, you know, going into that engineering background. I'm like, I can see statics,
yeah.
dynamics. I can see that if I'm going to put this at this angle and launch it at the, like, and so it was, but it was exciting to kind of talk about that and hypothesize of, okay, what's going to happen if we introduce this force, this direction. And it was, it's exciting to be in those conversations where you're just kind of like, what if,
yeah.
which is similar to being a writer. Like, what if I do this and introduce this? And
Yeah, absolutely.
Liz, I have a question as you're talking about being a teacher and needing to be in the classroom. Do you, not from a marketing perspective, but do you tell your students that you are published, or like,
no,
it's an uncomfy?
It just feels kind of weird. It feels like I don't want to like make them feel like, oh, the person who grades me would really like it if I spent this $14.99, you know, like it just feels a little weird.
Okay,
so
deal.
I'm like not hiding it. Like, I think there was something about it in our college's like online update thing, but I don't even know if the students get that bulletin. Like, that might have just gone down. I don't even know. Apparently I'm really not talking about it much. As I was talking to a coworker last week or a couple weeks ago and mentioned something about it, and he was like, wait, you had a book published? And I was like, yes, I guess I'm maybe downplaying it too much. Okay. I did end up telling one class, because when I got my agent who sold Millie, I checked my email while my students were working on something. I had my email up on my phone and I glanced at it and I got an email saying, oh, I'd love to meet. And I went, oh my God. And ended up telling some students nearby about that, because I was just all excited. But yeah, generally I'm not hiding it. I would absolutely tell them, but I also don't want to feel like, it could feel icky in multiple different directions. So
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think that means that's more of a compliment to you as a teacher, that you're like, hey, this isn't my space to be the star.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I just question it, because you hear that adage, well, if you can't do, you teach. And I'm like, there are amazing teachers that are doing constantly and they're just not letting their classes know, because that's not their role in that moment. So thank you for validating that.
And it's also because I have the travel business, and we also have the same sort of division of like, there's multiple, because I have so many different hats that I'm wearing, I try to very consciously not accidentally wear one hat into the wrong business, you know, because that would also be bad. Like,
you're grading your student, like, you need to go to Tahiti. Like, oh,
you're using roller derby terms while you're working with a travel client.
Anything that kind of, hang on, the wedge pillow is moving. Anything that kind of smacks of, I could make money from someone in this arena over here, I'm like, not going to cross those boundaries. So, you know, I'm like, if students want to talk about study abroad, travel to Europe, It gets mentioned that we have a travel company, obviously, because how could it not? If we're doing study abroad, it gets brought up, but we're not using it as a way to be like, and so tell your friends and family if they'd like a vacation, here's our card, you know, it's not, you know, right. That said, I've booked a number of honeymoons for former students. And we've had former students go on our short-term study abroad, or not obviously on our group tours as well. Some who we, you know, had is a study abroad student and a physics student back in like 2015 going on a trip with us in 2024 as an adult, you know? So
cool.
So, I mean, like that's been lovely, but that's been, again, once time has passed separate, they found it because like, oh, they friended me on social media or whatever. So,
but it does show the importance of just no matter where you're at in life, in whatever role you're making, it kind of goes back to community. You're making these connections with people and you're connecting with them on something. And then years in the future, that might come back around and you'll be like, wait, absolutely. I remember you in that. And I think that's one of the things we try to stress with our younger students is you never know when you are meeting somebody or having a conversation or being open to an opportunity that might not impact you now, but it might have a big impact on you in the future, and to always absolutely. Be looking for those connections.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't know. And I mean, I think it makes my life richer to just, I enjoy getting to know people. And then, yeah, it does lead to these other things. And not just in a, oh, and then I make more money way, although sometimes that's true, but also just in a, like, it enhances things. It's better for me. I can help someone out there. They can help me out, or we can work on some project together or whatever. And it's wonderful. You know, I mean, I wanted to find a way to get paid to go to Europe when in 2010, that was my goal for the year because I just kept going and paying. And my stepdad is Dutch. And so, you know, I would go over and maybe stay with family or something like that, or friends. But I was like, how can I get paid? And then I saw something from the study abroad office that was like, oh, short-term programs. And I was like, oh, I'll learn more about that. And I kind of talked to the head of Ed Abroad, and she was like, oh, maybe you could talk to this woman, Nancy, who she runs a class on the history of science. So maybe you could talk to her and maybe you could do something there. And I talked to her and she's like, well, you should talk to this guy, Adam, because he took students to Greece and I bet he could tell you a lot about his experience. And I met Adam and was like, oh, I would run a trip with this guy. This actually seems like I'd love to collaborate with him. And we got married 3 years later. So, you know, it like, aww. So aww. Yeah.
Made my day, Liz. That was yeah. awesome. You're a good so, yeah, storyteller.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Gee, you should, you know, maybe write a story about that. Well, Liz, this has been a blast. I love all the different interconnections and the conversation. If listeners want to learn more about your books, what's coming out, stay in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
If you go to elizabeth-holden.com, that's kind of my author website, but it also just has general links to anything about me. It has my email on there. It also has a link. I didn't even mention I have an X-Files podcast with my sister where we talk about the science of each episode.
Oh my goodness.
She's a biology professor. So we talk about science of the X-Files. So yeah, elizabeth-holden.com. So elizabeth-holden.com.
Well, I think we might need to have you and your sister back.
Well, that would be awesome.
That would be so yeah. much fun. Plus, we didn't even get a chance to talk about the roller derby personality yeah. aspect of this.
I would love to talk about that, especially because I've done physics of roller derby outreach events. So, yeah, because roller derby is great for physics. There's a league in DeKalb. We should talk. Yes. I would love to like organize and host something and collaborate with
this. Barbed wire buddies. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely think we've got some more plans in the future, but this was such a fun conversation and good luck on next book in the works. Do you have another one coming?
I have one that my agent has set out on submission to editors at publishing houses right now. So I'm just,
fingers
it just
crossed.
Went out.
Fingers
so just crossed. Like waiting for news. So
awesome.
And then I'm also working on another one after that. So
fantastic. Well, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you. Yeah, this was wonderful. Thanks so much for having me on. I look forward to talking more in the future.
This has been a production of the Steam Studio. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a review to help others discover our shows. You can listen on platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this Steam Spot. Thank you to our partners, NIU Steam and Northern Illinois University, for supporting this podcast. If you would like to learn more about the work we do, please check us out online at niusteam.niu.edu. Thank you so much for listening.